Of your Friday edition of Justice and Drew. Welcome back to the program. Our Friday roundtable guests are in the house. Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus is furiously inhaling donut holes as we speak. And over there, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Those two will compete against Sam in the Friday news quiz coming up in about 35 or 40 minutes from now. If you want to win $100 from our friends over at Twin Cities Cannabis, all you got to do is predict who you think will win. You can send that prediction to JD@TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com or tweet it using the hashtag TCNT. All correct predictions will be entered into a drawing for $100 of Twin Cities Cannabis products.
This one is for our lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, for I know that he is the lover of the rock music. You have quite the eclectic taste when it comes to rock music.
I right now have the I think I have the 40s.
He likes rock and roll.
I have been in the like a 40s junction groove on Sirius XM for since about Christmas time. It's actually a pretty good station.
But wow.
Anyway,
usually I'm used to seeing like you know your Thin Lizzy and your
I've got all that stuff. I keep everybody guessing.
Jeff turned me on to a pretty great Aerosmith album.
Isn't it good?
A couple weeks ago,
is that that old one, that very first one that was released before they were anything. I saw a post about
that's
that the other day.
But that's not the one that he was referring to.
No, this was the one. It's called The Road to Here. It was the one they released on Record Store Day last year. It was an old tape that they found from like 1971 with some early recordings, including an early version of Dream On with some slightly different lyrics. But yeah, it was good. It was really good.
Yeah, they're a great band.
You forget how good of a blues rock band they are, and then you listen to stuff like that, and that's really their base.
Early Aerosmith.
That's my fave.
All day.
I remember I went through when I worked for a classic rock station, not knowing anything about classic rock, so that fit well, and I wasn't there for very long. I remember they were playing early, which was actually like legitimate ZZ Top.
Right.
And going, that's not ZZ Top. They go, yes, it is. Yeah, I go, no, it's no, yes, it is. And they go, the stuff you're used to is not really ZZ Top.
Yes.
That stuff is ZZ Top. And I was
when Legs and Gimme Some Lovin' came out, ZZ Top changed dramatically.
I was
they got a lot more popular.
I was all about the car, man.
They got a lot more successful after those songs came out. But the stuff that came out before ZZ Top made it big is fantastic. Mm-hmm. They were an incredible power trio blues band.
Yep.
Listening to AC/DC, according to study finds, can be beneficial when performing medical procedures for surgeons. A new study found that listening to the hard rock legends at high volume makes surgeons faster and more precise.
I can get on board with this.
The only way I can relate to this is that for some reason I like to listen to music as I fall asleep. And it's really odd because faster paced songs put me to sleep faster than slower songs.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's a reason for that. I don't know what it is.
I'm sure you've spent an inordinate amount.
No, I have not. I really just thought about it when I read the story, and I went, that's interesting. Germany's Heidelberg University conducted the study on the effects of music genre and volume at the laparoscopic surgery. Surgeons were played soft rock by the Beatles and hard rock by AC/DC, while the speed and accuracy of the surgical cuts was analyzed against each musical style at different amplitudes.
I hope there weren't real patients on the other end.
Yeah.
Like this.
Did they include Scandinavian death metal in this study as well or not?
We're back to Cannibal Corpse again. The surgeons who operated with AC/DC playing in the background were faster and more precise. Specifically, the time needed to make a precision cut dropped by 236 seconds to 139 seconds with a 5% increase in precision. Meanwhile, the Beatles' Let It Be and Hey Jude also resulted in faster cuts, but only when played at lower volumes. When played at higher volumes, 65 to 70 decibels, the beneficial effect diminished.
Well, it allowed them to hear how bad those songs really are. I'm sorry, I love the Beatles, man, but if I never hear Let It Be or Hey Jude again in my lifetime, I will die a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Beatles. I got nothing against the Beatles, but man, those two songs, can we not?
Yeah.
Right. Can we not anymore?
The surgeons did thrive when AC/DC was cranked. Our results show that both soft rock and hard rock can enhance surgical performance, said the lead researcher. For hard music, the positive effect was especially noticeable when the music was played at high volume. It is possible that the music with high rhythmicity could provide a tempo to keep up the speed of the performance and thus enhance task performance.
Yeah, I think it's more, I don't know. I mean, I've noticed that specifically AC/DC. I mean, for some reason, specifically AC/DC. But when you get that style of music and mm-hmm. if you're doing a task, it's just so you get a little adrenaline. I mean, there's adrenaline in that music, and it kind of yeah. gets you worked up. I remember joking that, like, you know, there should be a law that says if you ever get caught speeding, your get out of jail free card is I was listening to AC/DC
mm-hmm.
because it's impossible not to speed when you're driving on a highway and you got AC/DC blaring on your radio. It's just impossible,
right?
So I think it has something to do with the adrenaline that it gives you and the focus. Whatever you're doing, whether it be surgery or whatever.
I tend to use the AC/DC playlist, you know, outside doing, you know, yard projects or blowing out the driveway. Now, if I'm drafting documents and stuff, I tend to lean towards like jazz or classical because I think it just kind of clears my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's something to it. I think it definitely gets the juices going and it kind of pushes you forward to do the task. Sure. Yeah.
A certain kind of music fits with certain kind of tasks. Mm-hmm. When you talk about, you know, you listen to certain kind of music when you're drafting documents and I'm the same way, depending on what I'm doing, you know, that will determine which music I choose to listen to. If I'm doing like errands and housework and things like that, I usually put on something kind of funky and groovy that keeps you moving, you know, mm-hmm. it gets you out of your seat and you're going around doing things. And it's more fun when you've got kind of a fun, funky groove to do
right.
it too.
Right.
Getting back to what we were talking about last hour, just a couple of things we didn't get a chance to cover when it comes to Elon Musk and his attempt to go and buy Twitter. I do have a quick question before we get into this. If Jack Dorsey were still running the show, I'm of the opinion that he would have sold it.
Oh, I am too. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the moment it happened, I think that Jack Dorsey would have been like, okay, cool.
I think Jack Dorsey realizes that he created something.
Yeah, he definitely does. Yeah.
That is had a much different impact on the world than he intended it to have.
Yeah.
I think he's very aware of that. I think Zuckerberg is very aware of that as too. And it's interesting in the dichotomy in how both of them are choosing to react to what they've created.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg's going around using his billions, trying to make yeah. people happy that are upset and blame him for
but not this
Trump
year.
Winning an election. Meanwhile, Jack Dorsey just went and grew a beard and lives in a cave.
Wow.
Is that what he did?
That's the life.
Well, and I can't help but wonder if Elon Musk's move was somewhat brought on because of Dorsey's recent comments. You know, if Musk is looking, going, hey, Dorsey's being honest about what he's creating.
Yeah, I think Dorsey, in a sense, gave him cover to do this. It's like someone's got to drive a stake in the heart of the beast and fix this thing.
Yeah.
Twitter CEO.
Kill it dead.
The guy that took over for Dorsey, Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal, tried to calm the company's employees during an emergency all-hands meeting yesterday as they panicked over the possibility of Elon Musk buying the company outright. Agrawal apparently, reportedly, told nervous employees that Musk could not change the company's culture because no one man can change that. Well, he is.
That's not true.
No,
that's just flat out not true. And that's not. I mean, that has nothing to do with Twitter or Elon Musk.
Right.
I mean, that's just flat out not true about any organization or anything. You get a different leader up top at an organization. I've seen it happen. I've been part of big organizations and corporations that you think, you know, it takes forever to turn a giant ship. Right. Well, not always.
No,
not always. If someone comes in there with the right attitude or even the wrong attitude,
yep.
they yep. can change the culture of a company real quick.
Yeah.
I've been on the opposite end of that more than I have been the positive end of that, unfortunately.
I think I've only ever been on the opposite end of it.
But even if you change the culture real bad, you could still run for Congress in the first congressional district.
Well, he is legally limited to what he can disclose about the situation. It is an interesting choice of words that it appears to leave open the possibility that Musk really may take over the company and turn it private. One Twitter employee tried to claim what Musk was doing by trying to buy the company for far above a market value was like a hostage situation. Agrawal then said to employees, I don't believe we are being held hostage. This provides all of us with this moment where we feel distracted, where we feel a loss of control. I am personally going to spend my time focusing on things I can control, and I believe it will matter. Well, I think we all know you've been trying to focus on things you can control
mm-hmm.
a little bit too much when it comes to Twitter. So to how Musk could do this, even if Twitter's board rejects Elon Musk's proposal to buy the company, Musk could still target stockholders by seeking either proxy votes or purchasing their shares in a so-called hostile takeover, thus taking over the company. A hostile takeover occurs when an outside entity tries to take over the company without the management's consent. Another avenue Musk could take, encouraging stockholders to urge other stockholders to let them use their proxy votes, then, having gathered enough proxies, having them vote to accept Musk's offer.
Proxy fight.
Twitter could conceivably respond by issuing blank check preferred stock to defend itself from a hostile takeover. A blank check preferred stock is a method companies use to simplify the process of creating new classes of preferred stock and to raise additional funds from sophisticated investors without obtaining separate shareholder approval. But the only voices that we've heard so far have been those that, in terms of those that also own stock, are individuals that have been against this, right? Because it wasn't the Saudi guys.
Well, the Saudi prince tweeted out saying that they reject this deal, but I saw some chatter that, you know, the Saudi prince has his own issues and he may not even control those shares, that there may be somebody else in the kingdom that controls that. The Vanguard and BlackRock buys, those, they haven't said anything, but those would tend to be, I think, leveraging betting that Elon Musk succeeds in this, and they want, you know, they want the uptick for their people. So
if it sells, that's fast money for them.
Exactly. It's really when you have someone like a hostile takeover like this, it's hard for the company, absent some sort of an agreement with the hostage taker, shall we say, to get out of this. They call it, you know, in parlance we call it the bear hug. Right. This is a no win for the current management of Twitter.
Because you guys were talking, we hadn't talked about it on the air, but you guys were discussing if the ramifications, if Twitter rejects the proposal and Elon goes to and dumps his stock.
Right.
And what would happen?
If he liquidates his shares and all of a sudden the stock price could tank, and especially if, like, you know, Vanguard is now the biggest shareholder. I think they have 17%, right? If Vanguard decides, you know, if this is all play to make money and they decide, well, didn't work, we're going to dump our shares. When you see the largest shareholders start dumping their shares, the stock price is going to go into the toilet. And again, Musk could pick it up at that point.
And the board has a fiduciary responsibility to act in the best interest of the shareholders. Right. So if they know that Musk, or they have, you know, a good reason to believe that Musk and Vanguard will dump their shares if they don't sell, if they know that and refuse to sell just because they don't want them controlling it, then they could actually be in pretty significant trouble.
They will face lawsuits.
Yep.
If they decide to dump their shares and tank the stock price.
This is going to make a great movie someday. Or like an HBO miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a really good, like, well, actually, there is 10 episode HBO.
Succession on HBO? They had this fight.
This is reminding me very much of Succession, which, if you haven't watched it, fantastic show.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what else. I personally, I feel like we've seen this movie already. It was when Trump got elected. I mean, the reaction to what's happening with Elon Musk and Twitter, it parallels the reaction of what happened when Trump won the election. Like, how in the world, like, if, and I guess it remains to be seen, the ultimate comparison will be if Elon was able to pull this off. Mm-hmm. If Elon purchases Twitter, I think you have a real world example of what happened when Trump got elected, and
well, we already have one
for all the same reasons,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the reaction. I mean, even people so far. I mean, I saw one blue checkmark tweet literally said, "If Elon Musk is successful in buying Twitter, it will lead to World War III and the destruction of the planet."
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think they were joking. Like, I don't think they thought they were engaging in hyperbole.
Right.
The level of the freakout that some people are having over a billionaire buying a stupid website that nobody is forced to use.
Right. Anytime. And it's funny how it was, you know, a year ago it was, well, it's a private company. They can do whatever they want. Well, what happens if he owns he can't possibly take it private. You know, this is a threat to democracy. You know, but this is the left always does this when they're threatened with a loss of their power or control. I mean, I just saw a story that on top, in the wake of this, now there's, you know, the DOJ may be investigating Tesla. And they jump right into the breach right alongside of them.
Yeah.
It's like, how nakedly transparent can you be as to your shiny little object is being threatened now?
Analyst Dan Ives told the Washington Post the next step will be Twitter's board officially reviewing the Musk filing / letter, and then it's get out the popcorn time as we expect many twists and turns in the weeks ahead as Twitter and Musk walk down this marriage path. If that blue check mark that tweeted that believes that, and if it were true, then unplug Twitter today. If Twitter is that powerful,
I know, right?
then it needs to be turned off. And, yeah. But you're right. I think the last set of data points that I saw, and it was a while ago, so this may have changed, was that like only some 10% of people use Twitter. I think
it's less than that.
Is it less than that now? Now, to say that is one thing, but also to understand that Twitter has a much bigger impact on society as a whole based off of a very small number of individuals in total, you know, per
Well, and a disproportionate number of Twitter users are media and politicians and policymakers. So it's kind of that self-fulfilling, self-feeding beast where it's really the only reason I'm on Twitter is because that when I need to advocate for things at the Capitol, when I need to get things in front of reporters' eyes, that's where they're seeing it.
Right. Yeah.
65198.
That in and of itself is a shame.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. You can also use the TalkBack feature on the iHeart radio app. Let us know via Twitter or the email. Use the hashtag TCNT or at JDTCNT, and you can email. I'm getting way too much information here. JD@TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com to let us know who you think will win the news quiz this morning. Coming up, a new major, Race and Resistance Studies.
FM. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. One more segment before your Friday news quiz on this Friday edition of Justice and Drew. Welcome back to the program. We got open phone lines at 651-989-5855. One more segment of that before we find out who the champion of the news is.
On Wednesday this week from the Star Tribune, Minneapolis public school officials said the new contracts with the teachers and education support professionals could cost, or would cost, an additional $80 million over 2 years, widening a projected budget gap and forcing cuts into the coming school year.
Great job, teachers union.
Yay! Way to go! Fantastic job. All about the children.
Doing wonderful work there. And you know what's going to happen after the layoffs? The lawsuits.
Yep.
Because they're going to be forced into layoffs because of this new giant contract. And because of this new giant contract, somebody is going to lose their job based on the color of their skin.
Yep.
That is absolutely going to happen because of the protections written in for teachers of color when it comes to layoffs based on seniority. So someone's going to get skipped over and someone is going to end up getting laid off that wouldn't have under the previous rules. And the only difference between those two people is going to be the color of their skin. And then there's going to be a big fat lawsuit.
Yep.
Look at Jeff. Jeff's drooling. I can see drool coming out of Jeff's mouth over there.
We've been busy the last couple of years.
It's like they did it on purpose. The tentative contract agreements with the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, which still require school board approval, were reached after months of stalled negotiations and a 3-week teacher strike in March. The price revealed at the school board finance committee meeting on Wednesday would be an additional $53.1 million for the current school year and an additional $27.1 million for the school year of 2022 and 23. This year's costs, largely for retroactive salaries, bonuses, and overtime pay, will be covered by $24 million saved by unfilled positions, $31.5 million in federal pandemic relief aid as well. But for 2022 and 23 school year, $27.1 million in contract costs would need to be offset by budget cuts. The director's senior finance officer said at the Wednesday meeting, to meet the contractual agreements and their associated costs, we have to find the money somewhere. And they include what the union called historic wins, securing higher wages for teachers and support staff, more mental health support for students, class size caps, and protections for educators of color.
Historic wins leading to massive cuts. Good job. The unions here are just doing such good work.
Leading to massive lawsuits eventually. What a disaster. But not surprising by any stretch. This whole thing from the get-go was built off of false premises and rationale, and it makes sense that even after getting what they want, it's just going to be more negative coming from this than positive. While the kids are still going to be suffering from longer school days and a longer school year because of it as well.
Enrollment has dropped faster than expected. They should have asked us. We could have told them. Dipping by 751 students since October and prompting the district to adjust projections to account for 1,000 fewer students this coming fall compared with 2021. Now, fewer students means less money from the state, which doles out funding per pupil. The district projects the enrollment decline to mean a revenue drop of $6 to $10 million.
Every school district is facing this. And I don't understand this mentality that we want to provide the same jobs to the same people to do less work.
At more money.
And then expect the state to make up the difference. And then you've got Education Minnesota sending out all of these little postcards that the House wants to give your district $6 million, but those dang Republicans don't want to give them any money. It's not a budget year.
Yeah,
they passed the budget last year with like a 2.5% increase on the formula.
Yeah,
and you have enrollment that is declining in schools, and it's only going to continue declining because this next generation of kids coming in, people have had fewer children than the previous generation. So these, sorry teachers, you're going to have to start looking for different work.
Yeah, there's going to be a Yeah. We've already passed the point when we should have really examined our public education system, how it's funded, how it's structured, where the money goes, why the money goes the way that it does, et cetera, et cetera. We're way past that point. But the status quo just wants to be maintained.
Right.
The status quo must be maintained at all costs. And you're exactly right. Every school district in the country eventually is going to face these problems that Minneapolis and St. Paul are dealing with. Vastly decreased enrollment numbers, which means vast decreases in the amount of funding. So you cannot maintain the status quo of having the same number of teachers, adding support personnel, giving them all raises, all of these things when your enrollment is dropping and your funding is dropping.
I'm actually an advocate for keeping the teachers because smaller class sizes are a good thing. But what we could probably do is maybe remove two or three of the eight deans at some of the high schools that I sub at, or the diversity inclusion officers that are in some of these schools, and the second or third, assistant principals for one grade. Yeah. I mean, all of these insane level of administrators that exist.
Yep.
And they exist thanks to unions.
Exactly.
They do. I mean, they write them into contracts. So, it sounds like a riff off of an old episode of The Sopranos, but they write those jobs into contracts so that they can park somebody there and collect a salary as a reward for being a good, loyal union member.
Yep.
From Campus Reform, correspondent Abigail Streetman talks about San Francisco State University new undergraduate major in doing that thing with my fingers, race and resistance studies.
You can now get a degree in race and resistance studies.
It will train students in the multiple forms of resistance and struggle aimed at achieving racial social justice.
This is what your tax dollars are going for. This is what your tax dollars are going to fund programs in race and resistance studies. And I have to ask, who would hire that person? Who's going to hire somebody with that degree? What job are you qualified for with that degree? I mean, the whole point of having, public higher education funded by tax dollars is that the deal is you're supposed to educate people to become good, productive members of society, whether that's learning skills or trades or, whatever it is, not race and resistance studies. It's, what the hell are you going
to
do with that?
It's getting to the point that if you're not pursuing, say, a postgraduate degree, like a professional degree, like a law or something else, or if you're not going into engineering or go to a trade school, because this what's going on in at these college campuses is just I can think of when I hear about this is the old Simpsons clip where the unemployment line is not just for philosophy majors anymore.
Wait, at what point in the course did they teach you how to make Molotov cocktails?
That's your PhD level.
What point? It will also cover topics such as histories of resistance, gender issues, transnational issues,
of course,
cultural production. The department also offers a minor in the program as well.
Oh, good.
Streetman points out that the social justice means equally distributing the wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. Redistributionist policies that we see play out on a larger scale in socialist systems. One course called Community Service Learning, Praxis in Race and Resistance Studies, includes provides students with experimental learning in struggles for social justice, community empowerment, and equity within and across communities of color.
What the hell are you going to do with that once you graduate? Is this not, do you need any more proof that the social justice world and the whole race hustling, it's a genuine industry?
Yeah.
It's an industry where you go into it to make money. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a degree in it.
Right.
It's an industry now.
Another notable course is called Race, Radicalism, and Revolution, and it gives students an idea of liberated visions of society and world. Yeah, you're right. I mean, who's going to hire you for this? I say that, and then I stop and go, no, unfortunately, there will be some idiot out there that will see this on somebody's resume and be very like, wow, that's what?
Yeah, some diversity and inclusion director.
Exactly.
At some public school in many.
Not for any for-profit company, that's for sure.
No. Yeah, for sure. You see that on your resume, you run. You run. Somebody shows up and applies for a job with that on their resume. You put that right in the bin and call it a day. That person will not replace Sam.
This is pretty fascinating for PJ Media before we get into the news quiz. Patrice Cullors, the Black Lives Matter co-founder who cashed out and got millions of dollars in media contracts, says that the recent scrutiny of BLM's charitable finances upsets her. Black Lives Matter is embroiled in several scandals involving the $90 million they raised in 2020 to end police brutality and racism. The most recent eyebrow raiser we've talked about on the show was the purchase of the $6 million mansion in California that was rarely used for the purposes they say. There's also the matter of $60 million in funds that no one at BLM Global appears to be in charge of. Cullors said that she gets triggered when anyone mentions IRS Form 990. The form charities must complete that reveals donors and sources of money. She said, I actually did not know what 990s were before all of this happened. An apparent reference to the Washington Examiner's report in January about BLM's lack of financial leadership transparency that led multiple states, including California, to order the charity to cease raising funds until it discloses what it did with the $90 million it raised in 2020. Cullors said that activists suffer trauma and that their lives are put at risk when charities under their control are required to disclose publicly what they did with their tax-deductible donations.
I do a lot of work with nonprofits and 501c3s, and there's a reason that the 990 is referred to as the postcard return. It's like the bare minimum of information you have to provide to the IRS. So if you can't do that, you shouldn't have the status.
Well, and you don't have to disclose your donors on a 990. No. You only have to disclose your vendors over that you spend over like $10,000.
Rob, you're triggering me. Just stop. You're discussing is very triggering.
Well, I think California has some additional things for nonprofits where they have to actually disclose donors, their top X number of donors or something. So, but it's definitely has nothing to do with the 990. The 990 is super easy.
She went on to say, this doesn't seem safe for us, this 990 structure, this nonprofit system. Structure. This is like deeply unsafe. This is being literally weaponized against us and the people we work with.
But then if you think that's it's not going to work for you, then don't be a 501c3 nonprofit. Give up the tax deductible contributions.
Oh, but then they'll have to pay taxes. And then, I mean, you know, then all that creates a whole new set of problems. I mean, basically, this is white supremacy in action. You know, imposing rules upon a Black Lives Matter charity is just white supremacy.
No, but you just get
because
somebody,
all of these rules and all of these forms and all this, they were made by white people.
Yeah, if you just get somebody in there that's majoring in race and resistance studies to write those rules, it'd be much better.
Just hire one person who majored in accounting.
She went on to say, and again, this is coming from the person that cashed out and got millions of dollars for doing so after founding Black Lives Matter. She also said, people's morale in an organization is so important, but if their organization and the people in it are being attacked and scrutinized for everything they do, that leads to deep burnout. That leads to deep, like, resistance and trauma.
Okay.
You have $90 million. Hire an accountant.
Talk to a member of a police department about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to a member of the Minneapolis Police Department about that. Or the Brooklyn Center Police Department. Or any police department in any major city about that quote that you just... About morale and how important it is and being attacked at every turn. Yeah, it kind of sucks, doesn't
it? Yeah. Says the person that cashed out.
Go try to find some comfort in your mansion.
Sam Sansevier's second to last Friday news quiz. Aww. Going to get that underway next year on Justice and...
Final segment of your Friday edition of Justice and Drew, and that means it's time to find out who the champion of the news will be for this week. Your contestants in the Friday news quiz are the lovely, talented, radiant producer Sam.
Woo!
Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. I don't know why I'm playing the correct dinger. For everybody. And, of course, from Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Rob Dorr.
Very excited.
Okay. I was expecting a different sound effect. There it is.
Rob.
That's what I was expecting. Two of them.
Three rounds in your Friday news quiz. We got your audio round, your parody round, and, of course, your headline round, where the game is won or lost every time.
My heart is already beating.
We open it up with the audio round. We have two audio clips for each of you. Stop trying to peek, Rob. No peeking.
Oh,
no peeking.
I was turning away from the mic because I had to burp, but all right.
No peeking in this game. It's very, the rule is very strict. We maintain the highest of standards.
Yeah, like
on the Friday news.
Clearly.
I saw the armored truck rolling up this morning with the guy with the briefcase and the handcuffs delivering the questions.
Absolutely. Jeff, you're up first. Audio clip number one. Who's this?
I would like to retire as a Viking.
Oh, Kirk Cousins.
That is correct.
Yeah, Twitter was all a Twitter about that. About
I hope he retires a Viking. I like Kirk.
Yes, this year.
He could do it before the season starts. That'd be great.
Rob, who's this? What are they talking about?
But we can't continue to pause it, right? We have to come up with some sort of relief. And I think the president is committed into exploring an amount that could be that he could be satisfied with in canceling.
I think that's Representative Ilhan Omar talking about student loan debt.
Yes.
Correct. Well, that is 2 points, Rob. Correct on both accounts. Sam.
What?
Who's this?
I don't know.
It does leave one very tired and exhausted, doesn't it? This horrible pandemic.
Is that the Queen?
Wow.
Of England.
Of England. Talking about the pandemic. She sounds so cute.
I know. I love that clip.
It does leave one very tired and exhausted, doesn't it? This horrible pandemic.
Yes, it does, Queen.
Yes, it does, Queen. Yes, Queen.
And if you say that regular, it does leave one tired and exhausted, this horrible pandemic. Like, if I don't have the accent, it just doesn't sound like anything.
No, it sounds weird when you say it.
Yeah, it just sounds strange. It's not a surprise. Jeff, who's this? What are they talking about?
We just have to copy what they did. Take their blueprint and repeat it here in this country and...
Not having a clue.
I feel like Jeff's clips cut pretty short.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Can I hear it again?
You just have to copy what they did. Take their blueprint and repeat it here in this country. And
I have no idea.
That's Dr. Oz talking about China's lockdowns.
Yeah. Trump endorsed Dr. Oz advocating for doing what that country did, and that country being China.
Well, that's not good.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Oh.
No.
Oh, he's got a lot of things that, thumbs down. That Republicans wouldn't like.
Thumbs way down. Rob, audio clip number 5.
I mean, you obviously know who all the late night hosts are for now. They have to pander to the liberal audience, which just watches them. It's so reverse of when I started, when you couldn't be political, and now you couldn't survive unless you are political.
Bill Maher.
Correct. Talking to Joe Rogan on the Joe Rogan podcast about late night comedy, including Saturday Night Live, and he made some great points in that interview about the state of late night comedy.
I hate agreeing with Bill Maher so much these days.
Well, the culture has kind of swung around, and now Bill Maher finds sort of himself where we've been for a long time.
He attempts to be rational. I'll give him that. You know, I disagree with the majority of what he says, but at least he attempts to be rational. Speaking of not being rational, Sam.
Oh.
Bonus point, Sam, if you can tell us who this person is talking about.
Come on, everyone, take it easy on Seth. It's got to be hard for him to do a roast, especially because the Simpsons haven't done it yet.
That's Gilbert Gottfried. Yes. He's talking about Seth Rogen.
Nope.
Dang it. No, no!
Seth Green.
Nope.
No. Oh, can I...
Jeff?
No clue.
Seth Meyers. Who's the guy that made
McFarlane?
Oh, Seth McFarlane. Okay. I had to go down the list.
Seth Green is on
Family Guy.
Family Guy. Yes. So that's
where the Comedy Central roast of Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah,
where Gilbert Gottfried had that very good
joke. That would have been my next Seth.
I knew it was Family Guy. I just got the wrong Seth.
I did too. Who's Seth Meyers? Is that even a person?
He hosts Saturday Night Live. And then
Rob, you got 4 points. Sam, you got 2. Jeff, you got 1. We move into the parody round. We have 1 parody song for each of you. The reference is a story we covered on the show over the course of this week. Your job is to correctly identify which story is being referenced. Jeff, this one's for you.
Well, it's a bird, 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 just a bird in his turd. I said a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. I said a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. I said a bird, bird, bird,
that would
it's
be
a bird in his turd. I said a bird, bird, bird in his turd. I said a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. I said a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. No, it's a bird, bird, bird in his turd. It's just a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. I said a bird, 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 it's a bird in his turd. Well, did you hear about the bird? Well, it's just a bird and his turd. It's just a bird, bird, bird in his turd.
Yeah. All right, now you can go, Jeff.
That's a trip.
That's about as many lyrics as a song is based on. That would be about the bird pooping on Joe Biden during
Heck
his remarks in Iowa.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rob.
That's
not
corn dust.
Rules.
It does rule.
It could go on longer.
That needs to be, we need a parody song album. That one needs to be track number 1.
I was watching Drew when he got in this morning in your production booth, and I had the volume down. I looked over, and Drew's head's just bobbing up and down, and I'm like, what is going on? So I turned my head.
Well, it's a bird, 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 just a bird in his turd. It's a bird in his turd.
He was like a bobblehead in there.
I
it was hysterical.
It.
All right, Rob, here's your parody.
Everywhere you look, everywhere you go, there's some poop for me to step into.
Is this the story about the plow cleanup leaving dog poop everywhere in neighborhoods?
No.
Well, yeah, it is.
I mean,
no, that's the story
can
we talked
you name
about.
Name the region. I don't know why I'm not the judge. I don't know why I'm asking.
Yeah, why is she asking me questions?
I don't know. I feel like it seems like important information.
I'll let
Drew.
The judge get final points. I don't remember that portion of being from the story that we talked about.
It was. Okay. It was. It was. St. Paul is basically everybody's getting all up in arms because now that the snow is melting and being cleared away, they are finding piles
poop
of poop that's been left and not cleaned up all winter long.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's very themed. Parody song round so far. So we will continue with parody song number 3. This one's for Sam.
You're so vain. Jim's old seat does not belong to you. You're so vain.
That is about a certain human named Jennifer Jennifer Carnahan
Hagedorn,
whatever her name is, whatever she goes by, respectfully.
Respectfully. Yes, very respectfully.
Well, that would be the B side to the Jenny from the Block mix.
I don't recall what you're talking about, Jeffrey.
Oh, that's
if plausible deniability.
Jennifer shines at a candidate forum.
Rob,
by Jennifer Carnahan.
He's not lying. No, he's not
she
lying.
She released her own press release saying she shines at any candidate forum, impressing voters, and quotes herself in her own press release.
She had a press release. I was awesome.
Even I agree that I was awesome.
John, we need to start
releasing our own ratings.
Seriously.
Why don't we just
we
do that?
We are the greatest show ever.
Become the Michael Scott of Minnesota politics. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Wayne Gretzky / Michael Scott. Jeez.
Going into the headline round, 4 points, Rob. 3 points, Sam. 2 points, Jeff. 10 headlines. Lots of blanks in them to fill out. Remember, buzz in with your name when you think you know the correct answer.
I am.
All right. Two points available with headline number one. Blank declares innocence in new song.
Sam.
Rob.
Jussie Smollett declares innocence in his new song, Thank You God.
2 points.
There you go.
Got them both.
Yes!
Well done. Headline number two, two blanks in this one. Blank to pay blank over $110,000 a year.
Sam. Rob.
Sam.
Walmart to pay truck drivers.
That is correct. Wow. On both accounts.
I need to grab it from my brain.
We have 1 point available here. Minnesota offers up $87,000 a year for blank.
Rob?
Tattoo prison job.
Yes.
Prison tattoo supervisor.
Yeah.
Soon to be followed up by a prison gin maker. Headline number four. Some Democrats raise concern about blank's mental decline and ability to serve.
Jeff. Joe Biden.
I knew it was too good to be true.
Some Democrats raise concern about blank's mental decline and ability to serve.
Sam? Nancy Pelosi?
Warmer.
Yeah, much warmer.
Rob, Feinstein.
Via process of elimination. Rob, Dianne Feinstein, yes. Apparently she is in bad, bad shape.
Oh, is she really?
Being propped up, yeah.
She should run with Biden. Number five, CDC extends blank to May 3rd.
Rob. The travel mask mandate.
Yep.
Headline number six, blank sold in Ramsey wins 106.
Rob, lottery ticket. Mega Millions.
Correct.
Number seven, big cuts coming to blank after slow launch.
Rob.
Go ahead.
CNN Plus.
Yes.
At the wire. Sneaking it in there. We have more listeners than CNN Plus has viewers, by the way. I looked it up.
10,000 a day, yeah.
Wait, are you for real?
Wow.
Yes.
What the heck?
Headline number eight, RNC votes to withdraw.
Sam? From the elections. The debates. The debates. I don't remember what it's called. I don't know. My brain just started scrambling.
I just got
nervous.
We're not going to take part in the elections
I got
anymore.
So insecure. I was like, Jeff probably knows.
Too unfair. Well,
technically, they withdrew from the Commission on Presidential Debates. They didn't withdraw
Give
from the debate.
Give it to
debate.
Jeff. He earned it.
I'm giving it to Jeff. That's a point for Jeff right there.
Not to be the lawyer, but.
I can hear that.
Words matter.
They do.
Headline number nine, animal activist glues
her hand to the court at the Timberwolves game.
That is correct.
And finally, last headline, two blanks in this headline. Timberwolves will face blank in the opening round of the NBA playoffs after winning a play-in game over blank.
Sam, Clippers?
That's one.
Oh, I knew that was
Which one?
I don't know. I think the second one. I think it's the second one.
Okay. All right. Yes, they did win over the Clippers to enter the playoffs. Who will they play in
Jeff,
the first?
Jeff, they play Memphis?
That's correct.
Woo!
That's correct.
On Grizzlies.
And with that.
On Saturday.
That's right.
We are tied, ladies and gentlemen. With a tie, Rob Dore.
How diplomatic.
Taking advantage of his early news quiz point that was given out earlier in the program to end up into the tie with Sam Sansevier.
I forgot about that.
So everybody who picked Rob and or Sam, keep an eye on your emails or your direct messages, and you might have won $100
of the news
from Twin Cities Cannabis.
This is exactly how I would have wanted my last match with Sam to go.
Sam.
What?
Compose yourself. Gather yourself.
Don't want to share this podium.
You tied. You didn't lose.
I know.
What'd you learn today?
Well, around 6:40 this morning, I learned which Minnesota school district has finally lifted their mask mandate and changed their quarantine protocol. It's about time. After 7 a.m., I learned more about Elon Musk's attempts to take over Twitter and how that's going so far. And after 8 a.m., I learned that listening to bands like AC/DC helps doctors perform better during surgery and other procedures. If you missed any part of the show today, you can find our podcast on the iHeartRadio app by searching for Justice and Drew.
I want to just take a second here and congratulate Narn Fan for having the tweet that should end all of Twitter. Earlier in the program, he tweeted, going to college is like paying someone to give you brain damage. You know, just pin that tweet to your profile and close down the website, because I don't think anything will ever top that.
I don't think so.
Jeff O'Brien, anything you want to plug here in the final minutes of the program?
No, just find me online, on Twitter, on Facebook, on chestnutcambrone.com, jeffreyobrien.today. I'm out there.
There you go. Hire him for all your legal needs, Rob.
I'll be co-hosting Wrong About Everything later on this afternoon. You can catch that live or go to the Wrong About Everything podcast.
And who are you sitting in for?
Amy Cook.
Okay.
Yep. Right. Not Javier. And then we've got a rally coming up. You can go to gunowners.mn, sign up for our email list, and we'll send you all the details. Rally at the Capitol.
On Monday, we'll tell you how, just for next week, you can hear an extra 2 hours of Justice and Drew.
That's right. We got 5 hours of Justice and Drew coming your way next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, tune in Monday to find out more.
Everybody, enjoy your Easter weekend. It's going to be a little chilly, but enjoy your Easter weekend.
Yeah, we'll be back Monday, 6 to 9. Have a great day.
I want equal opportunity to live tomorrow. Give me schools and give me better books so I can read about myself.